listening to Inland Edition. I'm Lillian Vasquez. Today we'll be talking about contact tracing. My guest is Michael Osier. He's the Assistant Director and the Chief Health Strategist for Riverside County Public Health. Thank you for joining us.
My pleasure, Lillian.
So I want to dive into the topic of contact tracers. I want you to describe what a contact tracer is.
There's a long history of contact tracing in public health. What they do is they track people who have been exposed to a disease. We've been using it for tuberculosis and sexually transmitted diseases, measles, for a number of years. And now with coronavirus, COVID, we're using contact tracers to track down those who have been exposed to the virus, but we don't know if they're sick yet or positive.
So what type of questions will a contact tracer ask? Take me through the entire process from beginning to end, if you will.
Well, first, someone has to get tested. If they're positive, they go into the state system, which is known as CalReady. Then every morning, we download all the positive results from that system, the state system, and we give all the positive results to a set of nurses who we call case investigators. They call the person who tested positive to do all the medical-type questioning to make sure, do they have a fever? What are their symptoms? Are they getting treated? And putting them on isolation, meaning they have to be by themselves. We then start the process of contact tracing. And when the best case scenario, we try to put a contact tracer with the case investigator. The case investigator is a nurse or an LVN, and the contact tracers are people we specially trained, and they will ask questions, where have you been in the last 10 days? What stores did you go to? What events did you go to? Were you at a barbecue, a wedding, a funeral, retail store, anywhere you might have been, and anyone you may have been in contact with for more than 15 minutes. The idea there is those people may have been exposed, and we want to call those people to put them on quarantine, which means they're not yet sick, but that we put them by themselves or with the other people that might have been exposed, and then we can track their symptoms for the 14 days or refer them to testing if they become symptomatic or we feel they need testing.
The nurse or the LVN, they start the process, and then they turns it over or works with a contact tracer. And then what kind of training does the contact tracer, do they have a list of questions that you have provided to them that they're going to go through one by one? And how lengthy is that?
We train them here. We've trained 360 plus or minus here in the county. They do 1 week in person. So toward the end, we did that 1 day in person and the rest virtual. And we train them about public health, what it means to be in an emergency operations center, what is the public health role here in keeping the community healthy. And then we teach them how to talk to people, what questions to ask.
Yeah.
Where have you been? How are you feeling? Is there anyone else you were in contact with? Do you have any underlying medical conditions? Do we want to refer you for testing? Because people often, like anything, they say, well, I haven't been anywhere. And then upon asking, I call it cajoling questions. Oh, I was at the store. Oh, I was at my wife's daughter's birthday party. Or I was at this funeral. Then each contact then leads us to other contacts. And we're trying to really narrow down on who was really exposed and who might be at risk of contracting the virus. So there's a whole list of questions they have to ask, including the demographic questions, what race, ethnicity, age, underlying medical conditions, anything like that that can help us help people stay healthy.
And when they call and they talk to someone, are people always forthwith and willing to talk, or is it sometimes a challenge?
The process is a challenge from beginning to end. People don't want to tell us anything when the nurse first calls. Many times they'll tell us who's in the household, but they don't want to say where they've been. In the beginning, because before bars and restaurants were closed, they didn't want us shutting down a bar or a restaurant or a church that might have been meeting indoors. They didn't want to cause trouble for anybody. But we really have to convince them that they're doing the greater good for the whole community. And that's where the skill of the contact tracer comes.
Yeah.
In my previous lives in Northern California 30 years ago, I was a paramedic. So I could talk to people about anything. People tell me everything. How do we impart that skill to people when we have 2 weeks to train them? Let's talk about training for a minute. So they do 1 week here where we teach them all those skills. And then the state has a great online program through UCLA, and they do a week of online training, very similar, where they do role playing and what it means to be a contact tracer, what forms to fill out, what questions to ask. And at the end of those 2 weeks, we put the contact tracers on a team, usually of 30, with two contact tracer leads. And that's where the mentoring process continues. So we don't just throw people to the wolves. We put them on a team where they have leads and they do regular training, because it's a learned skill. Most people don't have the skill right away, but we can teach them if they have the right attitude. We, of course, give them a laptop, a cell phone, a headset, and send them off.
Are they working from home?
Virtually all the contact tracers are working virtually from home, yes.
Okay. And who makes a good contact tracer as an employee? Someone that's talkative or a good listener?
Well, you have to be both, but mostly you have to be a good listener. But you also have to have a way of asking the question. We call it open-ended questions. You don't say, have you been to the grocery store? You say, where were you last week? Who did you come in contact with? Did you buy groceries? Where did you go? You have to do a conversation that's directed that helps you get to the information. And most people have to learn how to do that. They don't learn it from the beginning, or they're not born with it, mm-hmm. but they can learn how to do it. And you have to be willing to put yourself out a little bit. For some people, it's not easy to call strangers and ask personal questions.
Yeah, I do it all the time. It's got to be easy.
Of course. Reporters are great. As a paramedic, I had to do that every day. And some people, by the way, we had one person say, I'm not sure I can do this anymore. I don't want to call anybody. And we go, well, thank you very much. Give us back the computer. We'll see you another day.
How do they feel, maybe in the first week when they're doing this, about the answers that they're getting? Or are they really feel proud of themselves that they're helping us during this pandemic?
The good news is we've hired over 360 contact tracers between mm-hmm. June and July. Mm. And most of these people did not have jobs. So I like to think we're helping the whole economy.
So that's the good news.
That's the really good news. And we really worked with the Human Resources Department to make sure we had a great cross-section of people that represent the county. We have more than 90 of the people are bilingual Spanish, and another 30 or 40 speak other languages.
Nice.
And the race ethnicity matches the county numbers. And I think it's fantastic. So we took people really from the community. Now, some had college degrees. Some didn't. Some had degrees in subjects that had nothing to do with health, some did, but they're all equal in our eyes. But they really were people who didn't have jobs that came from the community. And I think that's also a piece I wanted to get the word out, that the people calling you live in the neighborhoods. They live in Riverside. They live in the area, and they come from the area.
Nice. What guidelines does a contact tracer follow? Is it the state? Is it the county? Is it federal? What guidelines are they following, or are you having them follow?
Well, we crib from everyone, from the Centers for Disease Control, mm-hmm. the State Public Health. We've developed our own questions based on all that. And, of course, they do the state training through UCLA online. So it's a combination of all those protocols. But in the end, everyone uses more or less all the same questions.
Let me reintroduce our guest is Michael Osier. He is the Assistant Director for Riverside County Public Health. What is the greatest challenge for a contact tracer?
The greatest challenge is getting people to just open up to answer those questions and how you go about that. Because you can't be demanding, but you also have to direct the conversation, and that's the skill. And people don't always want to tell you what you need to know. The other challenge is with the case investigators, the nurses in LVN, they also have to have that same skill. It's not just medical, but they also have to make sure that the people will share where they've been or who they've been in contact with so we can call them. Those are the two pieces I find the most challenging.
And how long is a typical phone call? Is it a 20-minute phone call? Is it 10 minutes? Is it an hour? How long is it?
We like to think it's half an hour. We expect them to do 10 of these a day.
Oh.
It can be a little bit taxing. I also want to mention, because of the nature of how the disease is spreading, we've created some specialty teams. We have one team that only is working with schools. We've approved 24 schools to open up on waivers, and we expect there to be issues around all the schools. So we have a team that only does schools. And as businesses started to open up, we've now formed a business team that only deals with issues around businesses and the nature of the questions they have and how they are functioning. And we have a team that works with county employees only. The county has 22,000 employees, and we've had a few outbreaks within different departments. We have people that work just specifically with county employees. And there's one more team that deals only with first responders, paramedics, firefighters, healthcare workers, sheriff's deputies, law enforcement. And so those specialty teams really are focused on the nature of those situations. And we think that's made a big difference in getting the information out, especially the first responder group. We've had a lot of success in getting
some behavior change, getting people to wear masks, getting tested early, and going on isolation or quarantine as needed.
Now, when you say schools, do you mean like universities or you as high schools? What do you mean by schools?
Because we were in the lowest tier, the worst tier, so to speak, purple now,
right.
Schools were not allowed to open at all, except elementary schools could get a special waiver, and they had to fill out forms and agree to follow all the guidance from the state. So we've had 29 schools, all private schools, apply for these waivers. So far, 24 have been approved. These are kind of like the beta test of what's going on, and they have to report anybody who turns positive or has symptoms, and we're working very closely with those schools to try to make sure that if somebody is ill, that they don't spread the disease to anybody else. So this is just going on right now. All the schools opened up within the last 2 weeks. In preparation for when we do open all the schools, this will be a good test for us.
Yeah, really. At this point, do contact tracers ever have the need to or the opportunity to follow up and go back and talk to someone they've already spoken with to learn more details or to share more information with them?
Our goal is that the contact tracers would follow up, because if you've been exposed to 14-day quarantine, and we don't just leave them on their own, we try to call them by day two or three, and if all goes well, we want to call them two more times. Mm. Oftentimes it's only toward the end to say, okay, are you having any symptoms? How are you feeling? Anybody in your house sick? So we try to contact them at least twice. Our goal is really three times during that 14-day period.
Wow. When COVID-19 first hit our community, did we have contact tracers in place? And if not, what did it take to get up to speed to be where we are today? You said you hired 360 trainers, so I'm guessing we had some, but not enough to take care of the situation?
Correct. Our sexually transmitted disease and HIV team, our communicable disease specialists, and they were well-trained. So in the beginning, we took them off their regular duties and assigned them to do this. And we soon realized that we'd be overwhelmed. And those people are now the leads on many of the teams, because they've been doing it for a number of years. And yes, it's the whole health department before this only had 600 people. And now we've added 360 contact tracers, plus we've added 100 more case investigators.
Wow.
So you can imagine it's been a huge undertaking to bring those people on.
Yeah, really. Do you work with other counties, either San Bernardino County or other neighborhood counties, Orange County, in collaboration, or do you guys partner or talk? How does that work between counties?
We talk to San Bernardino a lot because we have a big crossover of people back and forth.
Sure.
And the system is such, if you work in Riverside but live in San Bernardino County, you show up as a San Bernardino case. But if you work in Riverside, we happen to know about it. We become the secondary. If you live in San Bernardino's primary, but Riverside becomes secondary and vice versa.
Okay.
So many people work in one county and live in another one, and we have to work very closely to help those people, because they may be at work and expose people at work, but not at home. For healthcare workers especially, we have very strict rules on them going back to work. So we have to work very closely with the counties. There's also two other groups. There's a state health directors association called CHEAC, and we meet twice a week during COVID to talk about all the issues between the counties. And the Southern California public health departments have their own alliance, and we meet every other week to talk about any of the issues. And that's very much helped because, as you know, it's a mobile group. We have people, L.A., San Bernardino, Orange County, San Diego, moving back and forth, and we have to work very closely together.
I would think so. I'm glad that you are. You're listening to Inland Edition on KVCR, and today we're talking about contact tracing with Michael Osier, Assistant Director for Riverside County Public Health. After a short break, we'll talk about how many people are getting tested and what we should be doing when it comes to coronavirus testing here in the Inland Empire. I'm Lillian Vasquez. We'll be right back. You're listening to Inland Edition on KVCR. I'm Lillian Vasquez. My guest is Michael Osier, Riverside County Public Health. We left off talking about how Riverside and the surrounding counties work together when it comes to contact tracing. But in order to trace contacts, we would need to be testing. Are people still getting tested as much as we were at one point? Has it dropped off? Is it picking back up? Where are we on that?
In the last few weeks, the numbers have dropped on testing. We're now about half of what we were, and we really need to move the testing back up. We want to have the capacity to do 5,000 tests a day, and we're doing about half of that.
Mm.
All our sites have openings now. The turnaround times are 2 to 3 days on your results. And we really want to encourage people to get tested if they don't know their status. If they're feeling symptomatic, to get tested. We can see you usually the same day or the next day. And we'd really need many, many more people to get tested. We've run, as of yesterday, about 550,000 tests in Riverside. There's 2.4 million people. Oh. We'd like to get everybody tested so we can get a baseline status.
But do you only want to test those that are symptomatic or that have been around someone that might be, or do you want everyone to be tested?
In the beginning, when we had limited resources, we wanted people to be symptomatic or had been exposed.
Okay.
Now we encourage everyone to be tested because there's many people don't have symptoms at all, and they won't even know that they were positive, yet they're spreading the disease. Kids are like that a lot, where they're positive, they don't look sick, they don't act sick, but they're spreading the disease. So we encourage everyone to be tested. If you're 2 years old enough, we want you to be tested.
And why do you think it's dropped? Are people feeling more safe, or they just think they don't have symptoms, so they're not going to be tested? Why do you think it's dropped, in your opinion?
I think people are tired. I think people have been through this. They've heard all the news. The people that want to be tested were tested, and yet it's still here. And I think we have to somehow get the word out that it's important for everyone to be tested. Similarly, when the vaccine comes out, we want to make sure that everybody gets the vaccine because this is the only way to beat the disease. It's going to be here. It's going to live with us, and we need to have people vaccinated against it. So we think those two go hand in hand. I wish I knew the answer on what it will take to get people tested. We do believe that in some communities we haven't done sufficient outreach, so we are contracting with many nonprofits and community-based organizations that are part of those communities to work with us and to help us get the word out. And we think that can make a difference as well, especially in the Native Hawaiian Pacific Islander group and, of course, with the Latinx population in the eastern Coachella Valley.
Got it. So looking forward, as we come into the fall season, when we know the flu season is going to be upon us, and we maybe anticipate a spike in COVID-19, do you feel the county is going to be prepared with the amount of tracers they have and where they've been working on, that things will be okay when we get to the fall and be prepared for that?
We always worry about the holidays. Memorial Day started a spike, and then between Father's Day and July 4th led to the high numbers from mid-July to mid-August. Because once you're exposed, it takes anywhere 2 to 14 days to be positive, and we've even seen 2 to 3 weeks. We don't know yet what's happened with Labor Day. We'll know in the next 2 weeks.
Okay.
And if it's a similar spike to 4th of July, that could carry us through mid-October. But we as public health, we're very concerned about Thanksgiving, Christmas, and New Year's, and we want to be prepared if there's another spike. We're hoping there isn't, but we have to prepare for the worst.
Absolutely. Our guest is Michael Osier. He is the Assistant Director for Riverside County Public Health. And just talking about the vaccine, if we could, for a second. If things go well, maybe the first of 2021, and then won't it be the challenge of getting people to be vaccinated? I mean, will people be a little gun-shy, or do you think people will jump right on it?
I think we'll have a combination of people that will want to do it right away and people that will not want to do it, and we have to convince people that we need to be vaccinated. You heard a lot about herd immunity. We don't know what that number is going to be for COVID, but it's probably a very high percentage, probably over 90%, if I read all the literature correctly. And many of the vaccines out there require 2 shots, so we understand that's going to be a big challenge. And we can't do it. Public health can't do it on their own. We need doctor's offices, medical clinics, community-based organizations to help as well. But the only way to stop the disease long-term is going to be through vaccination.
I want to ask you, because during COVID-19, during any crisis, there's always scammers that take advantage of this time in this era. Are there scammers that are maybe call families or say that they're contact tracers? And what should we be cautious of? What should we not give up? What kind of information should we not give when someone says they're a contact tracer?
I'm glad you asked that question. Well, never give up your Social Security number, your bank accounts. We don't charge for this service, but we will ask for your birthday, unfortunately, because that's how everything's trapped in the system, by name and birthday. I think if they say they're from public health and you listen carefully, of course, there's always ways to check. You can call them back. They have a ruhealth.org email address. They could email you, and you could email them back. So I think that's the best way. We are concerned, though, there's all these conspiracy theorists posting on the internet how we come from ICE or we come from immigration and that we're trying to track illegal or undocumented people. That's not what we're doing.
Right.
That's not what we're doing at all. We want to make sure the community, the county, is safe and healthy. That's our only goal.
And what is your greatest takeaway in our last minute together? What is your greatest takeaway that you really want our listeners to know and understand about this?
Contact tracing is just part of what we're doing. Wearing a mask is key. We say masks are medicine. Keeping that social distancing of 6 feet, doing whatever you can outside. If you have a family gathering and being sure you're in the backyard, make sure you wear the mask, make sure you keep social distancing. And if you're ill, stay home and get tested. That's the key. We see so many people come to work that have some symptoms, but they don't think they're severe. Next thing you know, the office has to close. But wearing the mask and keep the social distancing and staying home if you're sick. Those are the three main messages. Contact tracing is just one part of that process. By itself, it won't solve the issue.
Very good. Michael, thank you so much for your time and your insight. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Lillian.
Michael Ogier is the Assistant Director and Chief Health Strategist for Riverside County Public Health. We spoke by phone yesterday. Riverside County Public Health maintains an extensive website with all kinds of information. For more information, visit rivcoph.org. That's rivcoph.org. Join us again next week for Inland Edition. That's Wednesday at 2 p.m. and 6:30, right here on KVCR. To hear this episode and past shows, visit our website at kvcrnews.org/Inland Edition. You can also listen to Inland Edition on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Play Music. Search for Inland Edition on your streaming service. Inland Edition is a production of Empire KVCR News. We get production support, writing, and editing from Sharina Wad, Rick Duloc, and David Fleming. Technical website and social media comes from Tim Steidel, Sean Houlihan, and Andrew Caravella. I'm Lillian Vasquez. Thanks for listening, and bye for now.